we'll talk about some algorithmic problems in groups with geometry of negative curvature. And this is a joint work with Vincent Garardin, who wrote it before I forget. Okay. So I will discuss very briefly the background of two algorithmic problems in groups, the equation problems. And the isomorphism problem. So what are they? You are for the first one, you are in a group G. You are given a group G, and you ask for the answer to the question given a system of equation. Does there exist a solution? So you want an algorithmic answer, so you want an algorithm that takes as input a system of solution. A system of equations, what did I say? Sorry?
What do you mean by equation?
I would just give an example, it would be very clear. So an equation is an expression in the language of groups. So for instance, this is an equation. A and B are given in the groups. They are just parameters. And X is unknown. And you want to know whether there is a solution. So you want to know whether A and B are conjugated for this particular example. But you can have other examples. With two unknowns, x and y, and several parameters. I don't have any explanation for this equation particularly, but this is an equation in a group. So I could have studied like that, and it will be useful later. So you can imagine that an equation is just a word in unknown and parameters in the group. And you wish it to be equal to 1. So this is a problem. And the isomorphism problem is another problem. So given two groups, finitely presented, for instance, given by presentations, how to know whether they are isomorphic? In the vast generality, this is well known that the answers are all negative. There is no algorithm for. There exists a group for which there is no algorithm solving equations. In the class of finitely presented groups, there is no algorithm solving the isomorphism problem. Actually, let me give a more specific picture of what is decidable and undecidable. So for the equation problem, we write EP for the equation problem. Well, let me distinguish between two directions. The first one starts with abelian groups and then starts generalizing in a natural algebraic constructions like nilpotent groups, solvable groups. And the second direction starts with free groups and starts generalizing with geometric analogs like hyperbolic groups, relative hyperbolic groups. So I will explain this in a minute. For abelian groups, well, this is rather easy. It's a linear algebra to solve equations in abelian groups. But already for nilpotent group, there are counterexamples. There are examples of nilpotent groups for which the equation problem is not solvable. That means that there is a nilpotent group for which there is no algorithm taking a simple system of equation that can answer correctly whether it has a solution. So the situation is rather bad. Already, the first natural generalization in this direction is bad. So now,
you just encode
the right thing. Yeah, you encode the right. So there is a specific example of a four-step important group, I believe. So I should write names. So this is due to Roman Pop. So he has a presentation of a four-step important group for which he shows that he can encode that. So on the other direction, in free groups, the situation is not as easy as in the abelian case, but still there is an algorithm solving equations in free groups, which is due to McAnally. I want to generalize free groups in geometry of negative curvature. So the first natural examples are Gromov hyperbolic groups. And here the situation is still okay due to there is a reduction to the case of free groups. And in case of torsion of virtually free groups, I'm not going to explain that today. And this is due to Hips and Sella. In the case of torsion free, and to Girardel and myself. In more general case. I want to go one step further and talk about relatively hyperbolic groups. So I will explain what they are in a second. So I should have written. Adjective, toral relative hyperbolic groups. So I will explain it in a second. Let me just say that this is another generalization in the direction of hyperbolicity, but not of free groups, but of free products. Here I'm considering this generalization of free products of abelian groups. And the situation is still good. So before going to explain definition and example of relative hyperbolic groups, I will draw the same picture for the isomorphism problem. So that we are done with this example. For abelian groups, it's still reasonable to believe it is easy.
But the next generation nilpotent groups, before there was a problem, and now the isomorphism problem is solvable. This is due to Grünwald and Segal. I'm not going to explain how they do that. It's a completely different subject. And the next generalization, so I stopped there because already the answer was no, but the next generalization is about solvable groups. Eh? And the answer is no. The isomorphism problem is not solvable for the class of solvable groups. I don't remember the names to the right. I'm sorry. But the answer is
polycyclic.
So for polycyclic, it is a solvable. It's a work of Segal. So the other direction for free groups.
Well, they are isomorphic if and only if they have the same rank. So. No surprise.
For hyperbolic groups, the situation is much more difficult. And it is remarkable that the situation is still positive. The problem is solvable. So in this generality of all hyperbolic groups, this is a sequence of work that originated from the work of Sella for a class of a smaller class, torsion free in particular. Myself and Danny Groves and Vincent Garardel. And for relatively hyperbolic groups, well, I have not explained what they are, but the answer is yes, still okay. And this is by Groves and myself. Relying on the same strategy Sella first initiated, that I will discuss a little bit, but rather briefly.
Which Groves? Daniel Groves or John Groves?
Okay, now I should tell you what are relatively hyperbolic groups. So, first, let me tell you what are hyperbolic groups. They are groups acting properly discontinuously co-compactly by isometries on hyperbolic spaces. Complete hyperbolic spaces. So let me write that at geometrically. Properly discontinuously co-compactly on a hyperbolic space. And the idea of connective hyperbolicity is to replace the co-compact the co-compactness by some kind of
assumption of only finite volume.
Not necessarily co-compact, but of finite volume. Of course, we cannot discuss volume for homomorphic spaces that easily, so here is the definition. That it acts on a hyperbolic space, properly discontinuously, but now we don't have co-compactness. We ask that there exists a family of horoballs, a disjoint invariant family of horoballs. Such that G acts co-compactly on the complement. So I will draw a picture. Here is the picture. Here is X, and there is a family of horoballs. Separated and invariant, so no horoball can approach another one at a distance, certain distance. And on the complement, the action is co-compact. So the quotient of X by the action of gamma looks like that. Okay. Here are cusps, and the cusps are the image of the horoballs. So here there are three cusps in the equation, meaning that there are three orbits of horoballs. Of color, the action is co-compact, meaning that when I chop out the cusps, the compact piece comes. So, the first example is fundamental groups of. I should say that now, yes. I should qualify the stabilizer of the horoballs. They are the fundamental groups of the cusps. They are the parabolic subgroups of G. And toral means essentially that this parabolic subgroup should be abelian. and there is an extra condition that the whole group is torsion free, which is rather unfortunate, but it's like that.
Torsion free with abelian parabolas.
So examples, fundamental groups. Of finite volume hyperbolic manifold. Which is more or less the picture just I drew, but maybe in higher dimension than just this one. In the hyperbolic case, the constant curvature equals to minus 1, constant negative curvature. Then the abelian derived. But already we have another class of example, which is very natural. We don't need the curvature to be constant for the universal cover to be Gromov hyperbolic. So fundamental groups of finite volume manifolds with pinched with negative curvature, and let me say pinched negative curvature. So. Between two negative constants. But here something happens. Here you can have a broader class of parabolic groups. So Margulis lemma tells you that parabolic subgroups are Turing protein. Here we run in another class of groups that I discussed previously, which sounds also interesting to consider. The number of steps can be bounded by the ratio between the pinching constants, but in principle it can be large. So let me now briefly comment why the two problems I discussed, the equation problem and the isomorphism problem, are related in the situation of negative curvature, at least in the strategy usually followed. So first, this is the basic principle of the strategy initiated by Zella, that I am explaining now. To understand the isomorphism problem between hyperbolic groups, say, the strategy is to understand, so you are given two groups, both of them are hyperbolic, and you want to understand the set of morphisms from G to H, which is too large for what you really need. So you would like really to understand the set of injective morphisms from G to H. Let me write that like that. Maybe modulo conjugation in the target group. So why is that? Because you're looking for an isomorphism. So if maybe you have an understanding of where are the monomorphisms, maybe you are in a good position to check whether there is an isomorphism or there is not. So this step is very related to solving equations. Because what is an homomorphism from G to H? It's just a solution in H of a system of equations. Which system? Just of the system of equations defined by the defining relators of G. You are looking, where can I send the generators of G in H so that they still satisfy the relators of G? And that's the system of equations. If you want injectivity, you may wish to try to encode it by to approximate it by inequations, saying that some words are not equal to one. And if you want to only study modulo conjugacy by H, this is more complicated. I'm not going into that direction today. But this is really a matter of solving equations in H. And now what can you hope for the best situation? The best situation would be that this set is finite. So that maybe you want to be able to compute it. And if you have computed it, then maybe it's easy to check whether you have an isomorphism or not. And here is another structural feature, another tool, very important, that I want to discuss now because it will appear in a few minutes after that. As a criterion, when this set can be finite. And this is a result of a combined result of Bezvinner, Poulin, and Gibbs. That if H is hyperbolic, and well, let's say we don't need to much level of generality. If both of them are hyperbolic, and if this set is infinite, then G admits a splitting as an amalgamation or an HLN extension, and I'm not describing it in the most precision, but I just write which is interesting. So this gives you a hope that when G is rigid, admitting no splitting at all, for instance, very rigid, this will be finite for sure. And if G is not rigid, maybe you can decompose it into rigid pieces and still reduce the problem. I'm just discussing a few words about the proof of that. Yes. A few words. So how can one prove that? Well, first, so you start with an infinite sequence of injective morphisms from G to H that are non-conjugate. And this gives you infinitely many actions of G on the Kelly graph
of H.
And since they are not conjugated, they must degenerate in some sense. So let S generate in set 4G. And the actions degenerate in the following sense, that the infimum of X in H of the max over S of the distance of X to SX must go to infinity. Otherwise, they would be conjugated. So the sequence of action degenerate. So let me call that alpha n. No, what is n? There is no n, sorry. Of phi n of s. I'm sorry. I forgot the most important. The distance. So I look at the action through phi n. And this quantity, which is the displacement of the generating set of G, must degenerate, must go to infinity. So I call this quantity alpha n, that goes to infinity, and then I rescale. I will scale the one metric on H so that this quantity in the new metric is just 1. So I divide it by alpha n. Now all my actions are somehow normalized. But this makes a sequence of action on a sequence of hyperbolic space that are more and more hyperbolic. Since I rescale by a sequence going to infinity, a delta hyperbolic space, I get a sequence of delta over alpha n hyperbolic spaces. So this goes to a zero hyperbolic space. So there is the good way to formulate that is to use equivalent homophosphor topology and Bézina-Poulenc compactness theorem. One can extract a limit action on the limit space. And this limit space is a limit of more and more hyperbolic space, so it's a zero hyperbolic space. And in fact, it's an R-tree. And now we're almost done. Almost, I don't know. It sounds good. Because we want to show that G admits a splitting. That is, that G acts on the tree. We have shown that G acts on an R tree. There is a step between the two. Unfortunately, this step is handled by Kuninite theory, which is Ripp's theory of actions on R trees. Of course, I'm skipping a lot of details. I have to check that the action is nice. But this is how it goes. And I will use that again in a few minutes now. So this was to explain how the equational problem and the isomorphism problem were related, at least in hyperbolic games. So through the understanding of solutions of equations and through this structural result, this rigidity result. So for toral relativity hyperbolic groups, I talked about that. Relativity hyperbolic groups with abelian parabolics, you imagine that maybe you imagine that it has something to do also with solving equations in them. And solving equations is possible basically because it's possible in abelian groups and free products of abelian groups. Now, if I go one step further and I look at relativity hyperbolic groups with nilpotent parabolic subgroups, which is a natural generalization, a decomposition into an amalgamation or an H&M extension, so a splitting of G. Basically, C will be finite or virtually cyclic. Yes, so. So, the new problematic for me now is relatively hyperbolic groups with nilpotent parabolic subgroups. So here the situation is not so nice because as I mentioned, equations are not solvable in all nilpotent groups. So certainly not in all free products of nilpotent groups. And for relative hyperbolic groups with nilpotent parabolics, this is a major problem for this strategy. However, the usual paradigm for relative hyperbolicity is to look at what happens for free products and what happens for hyperbolic groups. So if you have a class of groups and a property, and you can show that the property is valid for free products of this class of group, and that it is valid for hyperbolic groups, then usually you take the chance of showing that it is valid for relatively hyperbolic groups with parabolic in this class. So for equations, it's not very well, but for isomorphism problem, you can still say that maybe it fits with another strategy problem. So I explain now another idea is to use residual finiteness. Solve the isomorphism problem. When available, it's not known whether these groups are. When available, safe. I'm not saying anything. And I just. Right now, say that it is usually a bad idea. So why is that? Because there are examples of finitely presented groups that have isomorphic profinite completions and that are not isomorphic. examples are due to Grünwald and Whiteson. Whiteson and Grünwald. And this shows that in generality, or even you can imagine these examples as free products of these examples. You cannot hope to characterize isomorphisms of groups by just looking at their finite completion. So it seems to be hopeless. But still, let's see. So, I now state one of the important tools of what I will explain to finish. The other important tool is the theorem of Dan-Phillips. And this is where we will use residual finiteness. Well, this is the context in which we will use residual finiteness. So let me state that theorem. So it's due to Rossine and independently by Rose and Manning. The theorem of Dan-Phillips. So it is like that. If you have a group from simplicity with one parabolic subgroup, with one conjugacy class of parabolic subgroup, okay. So the statement is that for all finite sets, relatively. For all finite sets S in G, there exists a finite subset in P such that the following holds. Whenever I can find a normal subgroup of P of finite index with P0 intersecting, not intersecting F0, or maybe I should say except the identity. Whenever I can find a finite index subgroup that miss F0, then G quotiented by the normal closure of P0 is hyperbolic and, well, the natural projection is an injection on S. Okay, let me draw the picture. So here is the picture. There is only one cusp now. Okay, so you understand that this cusp is infinite, but is exponentially small. So if I walk very far away, I just see something tiny, it's a nanotube. And I'm just doing something here. I'm taking a finite index subgroup, So, if I cut first, if I cut here the nanotube, the section I see is, well, in the case of manifold, is a submanifold with fundamental group P, right? This is very, very, very small, very far from everything. And so I'm doing a surgery there. I'm killing all the relations of P0. So it's a tiny surgery, very far, in a very thin tube. Oh, first of all, I chop it off. So I erase this infinite line. So now it's a compact soup, it's a compact thing. It's not complete, but. And I'm doing this surgery here on the section. And the idea is that what's happening there is too small to affect what's happening there. Too small and too far. So when I'm doing that, I get a compact manifold, compact complex, with hopefully a hyperbolic fundamental group. So at the level of universal covers, that's really what's happening. I go very deep inside the holes, that means going very far inside the cusps, and I just remove the what is inside. I remove the deepest orbital here. I remove them, all of them, all the orbit. And I replace by some coning off, and now I questioned out by the action of P0. And so, removing the holes and coning off immediately makes that the action of the ambient group is co-compact. But here it's not proper because the cone points, when I cone off the whole hole, the cone points are used as a huge stabilizer. But when I quotient out by P0, it has a small stabilizer. It has a stabilizer, it's just a quotient P modulo P0. So, everything folds. I don't know where I am. Okay. But what's happening is it's a local isometry. It's a local isometry far from this common box. And this will eventually guarantee that the quotient group acts co-compactly on a space which is hyperbolic. And more importantly, that it is a hyperbolic with same hyperbolicity constant as the space I began with. Okay. Now, from this fact, from this Denfeld theorem, I can state an isomorphism theorem. And the isomorphism theorem reads as follows. So take two relatively hyperbolic groups. Only one parabolic group for simplicity, but this is just for simplicity of notations. And assume that the parabolic groups are relatively finite. Assume also that G, much like in the Vezina-Poulin-Rips proposition of theorem, assume also that G has no splitting over interesting subgroups. I should say that these groups are finitely presented, maybe. Now, the assumption that, okay, I haven't introduced the proper vocabulary. So this subject here is called the dense field. It's not even written, I'm sorry. So this question is called the dense field, and I can, instead of taking any finite index subgroup, I can choose to take a characteristic finite index subgroup. So, for instance, the intersection of all subgroups of index less than L, or a certain N. So this gives me a sequence of, because of Fourier finiteness, it gives me a sequence of characteristic finite index subgroups. So a sequence of characteristic delta fields, right? So assume that the sequence of characteristic delta fields of G is isomorphic at each level to the sequence of characteristic dense filling of H. Then, the example of Brighton and Grunewald should be kept in mind. You cannot hope for isomorphism at the level of the group upstairs. You can just hope for an injection, and that's what you get. Then G embeds in H.
How much time do I have? Five.
So characteristic dense fillings again is by when you take a characteristic subgroup of P0?
Yes. So the sequence of characteristic dense fillings is the sequence you get when you dense fill by intersection of all subgroups of index Atmos L. I should take some quite questions, because not all of these questions will be hyperbolic, because they have to avoid, where is the statement? We have to choose the parabolic to avoid a certain. Most of them do not deserve the name of dense field, but they are all well defined.
What happened for SL2Z?
SL2Z. SL2Z is the usual way to see it as a relatively parabolic group, is to see cyclic parabolic. So Sorry?
This construction is not
What does it mean?
Yes,
why do you mean it was not defined?
There's a question to define that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you don't need anyone to be of infinite units.
Okay. First, if a group is hyperbolic relative to a finite index subgroup, then it is equal to the parabolic group. So it leaves not much freedom.
I'm consuming my 5 minutes.
So let me see. I finished by stating the corollary. I should say something. So this is the Bezvina Poulin Ribbs argument. Where is the statement? Sorry. Here. You forbid the splittings. And you have. I should finish by that. And you have G. Questions on the sequence of characteristic when filling Gn, which is supposed to be isomorphic to Hn, which is quotient of J, of H. So this makes an action, an infinitely many action of G on Hn. In principle, Hn as a hyperbolic group is not a good object to look at because the hyperbolicity constant goes to infinity. But as a sequence of then filling of a single relative hyperbolic group, the situation is better because you have a space of constant hyperbolic, same hyperbolic constant. So you can apply Bezvina Poulin Ribbs property, rescale to renormalize the action, and hope to see something degenerate, rescale, and apply Bezvina Poulin compactness theorem, obtain an action on an R tree, apply Ribbs theory, and obtain a splitting. So this is something you can hope for. Yeah. So there are technical details to check. Now, I just finished by stating the corollary. The corollary, maybe, that I try to give as a motivation is that the isomorphism problem for a class, a rather wide class of relatively hyperbolic groups, and in particular, I have no time to discuss exactly what are the limits of this approach. They are not very clear, actually, what are the true limits of this approach. But for the class of groups that I was advertising at the beginning, for fundamental groups of manifolds of pinch negative curvature of finite volume, because they have nilpotent parabolic subgroups, which are residually finite, and being finite volume manifolds of negative curvatures, they do not admit any splitting over perfectly cyclic group or parabolic group. And you may apply this in both directions. So I'm off time already. So thank you. So
these algorithmic problems are well, I see them as a strong motivation and some tests to understand whether you have or to find a good invariance or good structural features. And historically, this is very vague question, so I would deserve a vague answer. Historically, when you look at the algorithmic problems, the first one of all is the word problem, and it's then algorithms solving the word problem in surface, in fundamental groups of surfaces. Right? And this has tremendous effect on all non-algorithmic, but all aspects of combinatorial group theory, with the theory of small constellation, and ultimately the theory of hyperbolic groups, because it somehow it found some good features to look at. Another example would be Mackinnon algorithm. It's much more complicated to discuss.
So here, are you using the Mackinnon algorithm?
So I should make a comment. Here, all this approach does not use equations. And I should make two comments. First, RIP's machine is strongly inspired by the Mackinnon algorithm. So it appears several times in all this. The second thing is that I'm not solving equations in free groups until the very end, because I cannot, because of free products of nilpotent groups, makes life very hard with equations. This step, the isomorphism theorem here, is a reduction to the same problem on the sequence of quotients. The sequence of quotients, they are hyperbolic with torsion, but hyperbolic. And then we can use the solution of the isomorphism problem in this case. This uses strongly the fact that we can solve equations in hyperbolic groups. Another topic would be we can solve equations in hyperbolic groups, and maybe we can say more in free groups, say, and we can say more on the structure of solutions of equations and so on. This is very interesting for itself. Maybe it's another way to answer your question of the connection.
I guess you need to know what the
Yes, but even more.
So in this isomorphism theorem, do you also get finite in any injections modulo H? Or?
Yes, the key point is to say they cannot, they should not degenerate after conjugation because of absence of splitting. I misunderstood your question.
So, I mean, it's not exactly the previous statement you stated using this argument was you assume the existence of injections infinitely many, and then you could deduce the contradiction with the absence of splitting. And here, the statement is quite different. The conclusion is the existence of an injection. So,
no, you don't have a control on the number of them. Or not that easy.
Okay, so we thank François once again. So we resume at 10:30 with the talk by Peter.